from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
Off and rolling Thursday, July 25th, 2024 is the date, and it's time. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the show. That would be Connor Dunning, as always, on X at CDunning929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
What's up, man?
Yeah, you were grinding up last night on College Football 25, huh?
The transfer to Tennessee has happened,
yes,
from Notre Dame. And I had a gauntlet of a schedule last night.
How about
but we
it?
Got through.
Well
we got
done. Through. I don't know. I've been hitting the online circuit pretty heavily. And also David Cobb. We're gonna talk about it tomorrow. I gave him a piece last night, 42-3.
Oh,
online play. How about
Who
that?
Who are you?
I was Penn State.
Okay.
Penn State on the road too.
Against?
Oh, gosh. Who was he playing? I think Michigan. On the road against Michigan.
I was about
Michigan.
To say, that's a fair matchup.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Now, we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open here in just a moment on Mac Brown. He sounded off today at ACC Media Days about amateurism and how it's gone. And, oh, where's college football headed? We've gone through so much change. I want to make a point about the changing landscape, what coaches are going to survive, what coaches won't. And if you can tell by my tone, I know that Mac Brown probably doesn't have that much longer in college football. He's 73 years old. But that's the type of coach that probably is going to become extinct here relatively soon. Also on the show today, we're going to bring on Jeff Calkins, 5 o'clock, from the Jeff Calkins Show and the Daily Memphian. Plenty to discuss with him. 6 o'clock, Kyron Samuels will join from Pulling Guard and Defiant Takes. He was a former all-conference offensive lineman at Jacksonville State, O-lineman to O-lineman. We're going to talk about the Big Ten, Oregon. Dan Lanning came under fire at SEC Media Days for his relationship with Nike, and Kirby Smart sort of took a couple of barbs at him. Strange, talking about his NIL money, especially coming from Kirby Smart's mouth. But he defended himself today, thought that was very interesting. We'll talk about the Big Ten as a whole. Who's the sleeper team? I'm looking at a team by the name of Penn State. Looking at James Franklin, I'm curious Kyron's thoughts on that. We'll hop into the Blitz around 6:30. Steve Kerr, of all people, Connor, Steve Kerr throwing criticism out for for Team USA basketball. Of all people to throw criticism out, it's the guy who I have sort of circled as one of the biggest issues with the way this team's been playing.
I don't think it's just you. If you polled everybody who has been watching Team USA and they said, "What if you could change one thing, what would you change?" I think he would be what? Top three answers you would get is the coach?
Yeah, I think so. They're just not tied together. They don't have, any real sets that they run. They just sort of try to go free-flowing, and all these other teams are exposing them because of that. I think South Sudan is a really good example of that. I did see this today. Did you see canceled Netflix trending?
I did see that. Was the new J-Lo movie that bad?
I was like, my first reaction was like, I didn't think Beverly Hills Cop was that bad.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was pretty good. But it turns out that their co-founder, Reed Hastings, donated $7 million to Kamala Harris. That's why Netflix is supposed to be canceled. Is this really where we're at? Say you oppose someone's views politically, so you make your life worse. Like, I don't understand this. And I think most of the people that are saying cancel Netflix talk about cancel culture constantly. It's just strange to me. We live in a very strange world right now, Connor.
You're going to cancel Netflix before the new season of Stranger Things? What is wrong with you?
Where we are so disagreeable that we make our own life worse by canceling one of the best streaming platforms out there that's doing a lot more live stuff. I can't understand this. I mean, Elon Musk, not too long ago, pledged, what, $45 million a month? Was that what it was? Up until the election for Donald Trump? I didn't see, like, this big campaign saying, don't buy Teslas. The reason people aren't buying Teslas is, one, it takes too long to get them to you, and they're just not that well built. But I didn't see that big campaign. It's just strange to me where we are at as a society. We're that disagreeable. Someone donates money to a political candidate that they endorse, and we try to completely cancel everything. I hate it. I hate where we're at, Connor. And honestly, our race coming up here in 4 months is going to be strange, too, in itself. But I'm going to get off of that because we have some ACC Media Days discussion to have. And it has to do with our guy, Mack Brown, at North Carolina. 73 years of age, second time at North Carolina. He's taken a couple of hits. He hasn't done all that well as of late. I didn't think he maximized the Drake May era in any way, shape, or form. But he sounded off today on the current state of college football. He said, there's been more changes in my last 3 years than my first 47. And he went on to say, we're dealing with things we've never dealt with before. The people that can adjust and make it work are going to be the ones that have the best programs. It's not ideal for any of us. None of us voted for it, but it's here. Amateurism is gone. We're the mini NFL, so now we've got to figure out how to handle it. Now, one thing that I always have found strange about the discussion around, oh, don't make college football the NFL. I understand tradition. I understand, why people watch college football. The pageantry, the fans are a lot more lively. You're dealing with maybe a little bit more mistakes, so it makes for a better product at times. But at the same time, making it the mini NFL and people viewing that in a negative light, Connor, I've always found strange. The NFL does pretty damn well for itself. If they're making themselves the mini NFL, I don't view that as necessarily a bad thing. The NFL makes more money than any league in the world. The NFL brings in more TV ratings than any league in the world. So it's just strange to me that is viewed in this negative light. So I just want to get that out of the way. Now, as for what he said about amateurism is gone. I just want to ask him a question right now. Mack Brown, here's my question to you. Are you really going to sell to me that Vince Young was an amateur? Are you selling me that guy that won you a national championship when you were at Texas was an amateur? Drake May. Before the NIL era, that's an amateur? These guys have never been amateurs. That's always been a complete farce. Don't try to even act like amateurism was ever there in the first place. It was there by name and by trade only. We've moved into an era where they're making money, and you want to say amateurism is completely gone. Well, you were paying those guys when you were at Texas. You were paying those guys early at North Carolina. You've been paying guys for a long, long time below the table. These guys have never been amateurs, and it's just strange. I know he's 73 years old. I know he's dated. I know he doesn't have a lot more time to coach at the college football level. But to hear him talk about amateurism in this way, it just shows me and continues to show me that there are coaches like him that are going to be extinct here relatively soon. You can't consistently talk this way. It doesn't work well with recruits. It doesn't work well with your fan base. You have to move in the right direction. And then I look also at a guy we'll talk about a little bit later, but I'm going to talk about now, Dan Lanning. NIL funds, doesn't really throw shots at anybody else. I think people sort of took the wrong approach with his Colorado pregame speech last year, but
you mean the one he made in the locker room before the game to his own team?
Yes.
Yeah.
But that's a guy who I think the rest of college football is going to have to catch up to in a way that people are not understanding at this moment. This is a guy who understands this day and age. He relates to his players. He's moved in the 21st century. He asks for donations. He goes out of his way to create relationships behind the scenes. Doesn't complain. Doesn't put himself out there, talk about amateurism. He's never talked about amateurism. He realizes the business of college football and what it is, and he takes it for what it is. And I think Kirby Smart's a guy like that. I think Marcus Freeman over at Notre Dame's like that. You have guys that are moving forward, and you have guys that are getting left in the past. And Mack Brown showed me today he's getting left in the past. And it's not just him. There's a lot of coaches around the country that share these same thoughts with Mack Brown. But I would tell them right now, move or get lost, right? Move forward or get lost. It's that simple.
You're not going backwards. You know, it's not going to go back to what it used to be. And to be quite honest, I still prefer the NIL age because I have always believed that college players should be being paid, especially with the amount of money these universities and colleges were bringing in, specifically with football. It needed to happen, and I'm glad that it happened. I will say, I understand that universities and colleges need some sort of protection, I think, from how frequent players are entering the transfer portal. And I do think that there needs to be a bit more of a commitment from the player side with this amount of money being thrown around. But you can say things like that without being completely against NIL and saying that, you know, amateurism is dead. Amateurism has been dead since the moment people started playing boosters. Like, as soon as boosters became involved with college football, you know what died? Amateurism.
Yeah.
Like, all of your success at Texas, to your point, you're telling me that you did all of that in the green? None of it was paying players? None of it? Not a single time?
Vince Young didn't make a cent while he was
in Texas. He didn't make a cent. All NIL did was bring it above board. We can just see it out in the open now. But all of this was happening behind the scenes anyway. It already was happening. And I don't understand why these older coaches are going out there and saying these things, because it's going to hurt you on the recruiting trail. If I was a team that heard North Carolina say that right now, I'd be like, oh, Mack Brown, they may pay you, but he's not going to like you for it. He might hold that against you in practice. He might hold that against you in gameplay. You trust him? He's already said that he doesn't like it. So you're going to go there and you're going to trust that guy with your money? Don't think so.
And here's the thing that I will say, and I think this is the message I'd give to Mack Brown. Nick Saban was one of the best adapters in college football history. We know what he did on the field, but even off the field. He found a way to get donors to buy into NIL. He used NIL. He used the transfer portal. He did those things. But still, it got to be too much for him, and he stepped out of the way, and he's done coaching now. I think Mack Brown, if you're going to have this opinion in this day and age of college football, I know that the check is massive, and you want to make that check. You're making $9 million a year or whatever the hell it is. But if you're going to have these opinions, you need to get out of the way and let somebody else take that seat. You need to let somebody else move in and take that program into the 21st century. You need to let someone else have a handle on that program before it's too late for them. And I know he's been around a long time. I know he's 73 years old. It's not crazy that he has these opinions. In fact, I sort of expected him to have these opinions. But for him to say it in front of the ACC media, it's just a strange, strange look, and I don't understand it.
Honest question. Have we seen a coach with this mindset in NIL have true success yet?
Not particularly, no. No. I mean, Nick Saban would talk about it, but he actually practiced it
right
away, where Mac Brown's not doing that. Dabo Sweeney has some of these same opinions.
And he feels like the prime example.
And we've seen him fall off pretty substantially and not use the transfer portal. So
please, high school players. Yeah, transfer.
We have high school transfers. I don't think we really do. I mean, you look at last year, Kalen DeBoer, Steve Sarkisian, Nick Saban, Jim Harbaugh did a really good job with it before he went to the NFL, although he got caught up a whole lot with the recruiting trail. You don't see coaches with this mindset win at a high level anymore. And I think that the powers that be at most of these institutions will start to see that and start to move forward.
Well, just today, the ESPN Top 25 recruiting classes came out for college football, and I'm just going to go through the top five, and you tell me if one of these coaches has, you know, old opinions on NIL. Ohio State.
No.
Alabama.
Well, and Ryan Day, he's come along.
Right.
You know, a couple years ago, he was getting used to it, but no, not anymore.
Right. Alabama.
No.
LSU.
Absolutely not.
Georgia.
No.
Oregon.
No, definitely not. You see coaches at the top of the sport taking advantage of the situation instead of complaining about it. It's not something new, but it's something that keeps coming up, and I don't know why it keeps coming up. We keep having the same redundant conversations about it. If you're not going to move forward, if you're just going to sit there and complain, it's time to let somebody else step in and go handle business for you. Now, speaking of Dabo Sweeney, see what he said today? About his anti-portal, he rejected his anti-portal perception. Said, quote, I'm not anti-portal, I'm pro the young men, talented young men that I believe in on our team, that believe in me, that believe in Clemson. He just gets cornier and cornier by the day. I can't get over Dabo Sweeney and his rejection of the changing state of college football, not wanting to get transfers. I think they do well on the NIL front. They still have a long bankroll, but he rejected that for a while. He also said way back in the day that he was going to quit coaching if the players ever started making money. He just finds a way to outdo his corniness every time he steps in front of a mic.
Could you imagine a player going to buy something and then being like, all right, this is going to cost X amount of dollars. And he's like, no. Dabo believes in me. That's the money that I'm being paid at Clemson. This is silly. I don't understand why he continues to push back against something that can help his program. I just went through the recruiting rankings. They're number 11 right now. Usually Clemson's been in the top 10 the last few years. The reason they're probably number 11 is I bet that they're losing recruits because they're saying, I don't necessarily trust Dabo to try to make me the most money. Because that is a part of recruiting
yes,
now. Like it
100%.
Or not, that is
brand
part of
exposure,
recruiting.
The whole
the
thing.
The first thing a player wants to hear now is how much money can I make at your university? How are you going to put money in my pockets? And if his answer is, well, I believe in you. All right, next.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. And then with the transfer portal, listen, I'm not of the opinion that you can't win at a high level if you don't delve into the transfer portal waters. I think there's a lot of good programs. You namely just look at Georgia, who gets five-star after five-star, develops them, moves forward, doesn't bring in a whole lot of transfers, doesn't have a bunch of outgoing transfers, has that continuity. Yes, I see programs at the highest of levels do it with high school recruiting, year over year over year. But even Kirby Smart's not averse to going into the transfer portal and finding some guys. Look at his entire wide receiver room. Ra-Ra Thomas from Mississippi State. Dominic Lovett from Mizzou. He's gone out of his way to try to find and plug holes. Again, I don't think that if you don't use the transfer portal, you can't be successful. But even the best of the best have to use it to plug holes year to year. That's how you have to use it. Use these things to your advantage, and you will be better because of it. Now, I still think Clemson, when we look at the ACC, with ACC Media Days behind us, I think Clemson has probably the best shot in the ACC to go win. I think another year with Garrett Riley at OC, Cade Klubnik at quarterback, they brought in Matt Luke as an offensive line coach. Their O-line has been struggling. I think he will help out there. Their defense is really good. Peter Woods on that side of the ball is phenomenal. I think Clemson's going to be good. I think they'll be in the college football playoff this year. But there's a difference between getting into a 12-team college football playoff and getting over the top and winning national championships, which is what he's used to, which is what he's done in the past. I think there needs to be an understanding from him that at some point or another, you're going to have to delve into those transfer portal waters regardless of the situation. Last year, he had an opportunity. He ended up losing the conference to Florida State. He had an opportunity to go get that 1,200-yard receiver, Keon Coleman. If he would have offered Keon Coleman last year, Keon Coleman would have been in a Clemson uniform. Clemson would have been better for it. But you let a guy in Mike Norvell, who I think is a 21st century coach, who's moving that direction, who likes the NIL, who embraces this whole thing, you let him get his hands on him. And what happened? They went 13-0 and ran the table. Beat you. You need to look around a little bit as a coach. You need to think about your situation. Think about what you're letting others around you get, and then move in that direction. Find a way to change your ways. So, Dabo Swinney, I think he's going to be fine this year in the ACC, but still, I continue to worry about his future, and I continue to worry about his mindset when it comes to recruiting and everything else, and I wonder how his team takes that. I wonder how recruiting trail's going for him with that type of mindset. He still gives out NIL money. He finds ways to put some money in their pockets. But in the changing day of this whole landscape, he's got to move forward.
So we got a message from Ryan, friend of the program, and I actually think it's a pretty great point that he makes, and I want your opinion on it. He said, coaches like Brown aren't mad that the players are getting paid. He's mad that they can't control the players' cash. They're mad at their inability to rule with an iron fist. Their lust for the complete control is why they're almost always failures at the pro level. Interesting.
Well, it's the truth of it.
Yeah.
You don't feel like you have complete power when you have players that make more than your assistant coaches, right? They have leverage now. Which is how it works at the NFL level, by the way. You know, we look at CeeDee Lamb's situation
right now. Go look at the Cowboys
now. Yeah, like, when you don't have complete control, people can leave, people can change their you know, situation. And that's what's frustrating these types of coaches. But also, it works both ways, man. It works both ways. If you put more money in their pocket, if you support them through these things, they're probably going to play better on the field. They're probably going to feel supported and stay and probably give your program a whole lot more.
I don't understand why they don't acknowledge the changing landscape of college athletics. Because you can still be like, listen, I understand that NIL is helping move forward the sport and players need to be paid. We just need some regulations around it. That feels like a take that everybody can agree with. Because I understand that there is some frustration with the amount of leverage that the players have. In my opinion, I think the players have a little bit too much leverage at the college level right now. There needs to be some sort of regulations around it. I also believe that that will happen at some point. But going up there and just being completely against it, I don't think it's going to make any positive change moving forward. Because at the end of the day, I think some people are just going to chalk it up to old man yelling at the clouds.
That's what it is, though. That's actually what it is.
I know. That's how it's being taken by everybody, because they're not offering any solutions. They're offering all these problems, but no solution.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, to be fair, they can't control the solution right now.
No.
The way that that's going to be controlled is, I know we're in election year, so that's not going to happen anytime soon, but that's Congress. That's federal government stepping in and making things right, making things whole. So they can't control it. But at the same time, like, complaining about it does nothing for you.
Right. That's kind of my point. It's just, you're just yelling about it.
100%. 100%. Now, I do want to go ahead and grab an early break here. And when we come back, the NBA TV media rights deal, all this stuff, there's a lot of things going on. But there's a little wrinkle that I think people might enjoy that we will have going after the 2024-25 season. Going into 25-26 and beyond, that 11-year deal, there's a little bit of a wrinkle that I think people will enjoy. We'll talk about that next. 92.9 FM ESPN. So, pure honesty. It's time for some honesty off the top of this segment. I, with the new TV media rights deal in the NBA, have not been that excited about what's coming. I like it coming back to NBC. They have the sort of biggest contract of the new media rights deal. But the ESPN stuff bothers me. I don't think they do good jobs with the pre- and post-game show. Stephen A. is way too featured. They talk about, can he score a point in a game to 100 versus LeBron? Things like that. That has not been exciting for me. And I think losing Inside the NBA, moving everything to Amazon, going to a streamer, that hasn't been the most exciting thing in the world for me. So I am a little mum to the idea of what it's going to look like going from 2025-26 on. But good news is good news. Right, Connor? Good news is good news. And I thought we got some good news. ESPN trying to bump up and make their end of the bargain a little bit better. They have made it clear that in 2025-26, when they take over, they are going to do an NFL Red Zone spinoff for NBA games. They're going to go ahead and put it, I believe, on ESPN Plus and all the games every night in the most important moments. I think it's going to be harder to execute than NFL Red Zone, right? Because it's a lot easier with football. You have time between plays. You can see what's happening. You can see when people get into the red zone. So I don't know where the look-ins are actually going to come. But this is nice. This is something that I think the consumer actually can get behind. I think we win for once with this. This is a great idea. I just want to see how they execute.
I'm a big fan of the idea, but I do have a lot of questions about the execution of it, most notably because I'm just curious how they're going to be able to jump into all of these games, given how just television works with the NBA and streaming works with the NBA. I think it's ultimately the success of this, different than Red Zone. Red Zone feels like the success of it is because of the football that is being played,
sure,
because of the games. In my opinion, the success of an NBA Red Zone type show is going to have to come with the crew that they have talking about the games that are in studio. If they nail that aspect of it, I think it can be successful. But if it's just, to be quite honest, Stephen A. that they're throwing into it, I don't think it will work.
And this is where I wanted to go with this.
Mm-hmm.
The crew, maybe, depending on if certain people agree to join ESPN, the crew may be solid. Maybe solid. According to Michael McCarthy from Front Office Sports, ESPN is now showing interest in hiring Charles Barkley and the entire cast of Inside the NBA. So we may be able to catch them elsewhere. And this is what he wrote. The Chuckster could command $20 million plus offers from the NBA's new trio of rights partners, newcomer Prime, incumbent ABC, ESPN, and former broadcast partner NBC, which held the rights during the Michael Jordan golden era from 90 to 2002. ESPN is already eyeing Barkley and the entire cast from Inside the NBA, say my sources, ditto for Prime. So they could be on Amazon Prime or ESPN. And if you're going to go down this route where you're doing an NFL Red Zone spinoff, I think the Inside the NBA crew could be pretty solid for that. I think they could really, you know, bring eyeballs to that, get more ratings on it, on your streaming service, likely ESPN+. Plus, I like the idea of bringing the Inside the NBA crew to ESPN because we know we've missed out. I mean, the pre- and post-game show I already mentioned are terrible on ESPN. They barely talk about the game itself. Bringing in these guys would be best case scenario for them. But we do have Charles Barkley saying he was going to step away if Warner Brothers Discovery didn't get the deal done. We have Ernie Johnson saying he's sticking by Warner Brothers Discovery and TNT. So there's a lot of hoops they're going to have to jump through, and they're going to have to do a lot of convincing. But if they can go ahead and make these hires, that would be phenomenal.
You know what helps sway opinion? $20 million per year.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah, that usually helps sway opinion. If they are able to land the Inside the NBA crew and they could do this type of show, it would probably be a home run. It really would be, because they are clearly the best NBA show that's on TV. And is Charles Barkley going to be the biggest media free agent we've ever seen?
He's going to be up there. One thing about Charles, though, I'm curious how they're going to structure a deal if he gets a deal done, because he doesn't want to do a whole bunch of work. He just sort of wants to do the Inside the NBA thing and then be done, right? He's talked about ESPN in the past and how they just make everybody just work, work, work. Look at Stephen A. Smith, some of their biggest guys. Pat McAfee does a lot of work as well. He doesn't want to do that in any way, shape, or form. So if ESPN's going to land this, there's going to be some concessions they have to make about how much he's actually going to work.
Well, that's why when I first read the idea about an NBA Red Zone type thing, that crew popped in my head, because they're already kind of sitting there in that studio for – a ton of hours on game nights that they're doing.
Goofing off.
So it wouldn't be that much different. And to be quite honest, they'd be able to make, you know, commentary and be able to give you real analysis on some of these games. And I feel like that's been lacking from ESPN the last few years. It's that crew is without a doubt the best that we have in the NBA. And if we are able to watch games around the league and jump into them with their commentary, I will be watching it every single possible time I can.
Yeah. And I think Amazon would, if Amazon's able to land them, that would be good, because they don't have a pre and post game crew for the 66 games they're going to have during the regular season.
Yeah, I have no idea what it's going to look like.
They're going to have the NBA Cup, right, the in-season tournament, the play-in. They're going to have all these different games. They need to find a crew, and I'd imagine that would be a good landing spot as well. I don't think that the ESPN's ultimately going to get this done. That's just sort of my opinion on it. Charles Barkley has bad-mouthed them too much in the past. I think Amazon probably has a better shot than anybody to go ahead and land them, because they have openings right now and they need analysts.
Yeah, maybe. I wonder if NBC could get them too. I wonder if NBC could get that crew, because we already know that they're going to bring back like inside the NBA and that stuff. Like whenever this deal got announced, they've already sent out some videos with the classic music that everybody loves. So I wonder if maybe they're going to try to go after Chuck too.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. James Posey joining the Phoenix Sun staff as an assistant coach.
Good for him.
12-year NBA career. We remember him fondly here. How about that? Good for him.
Good for him.
Sun's doing a good job with that staff, I think, building out that staff, too, with Bud.
James Posey was a hooper, man. Like, everybody, if you're an OG Grizzlies fan and somebody brings up James Posey, absolutely lethal out there. One of the premier 3-and-D guys before 3-and-D was really a thing within the league. I mean, we did an exercise. Was it last year or the year before?
Yes.
2 years ago?
Who would you add to the team?
And a lot of people, I think we ended
James
up landing
Posey
on...
James Posey was very high on the
I
list
I think
for
we
everybody.
Ended up landing on Shane Battier at the time.
Yep.
But James Posey, I think, was the number two choice that we had. We were like, he would be perfect on that Grizzlies team because he unlocks everything that you would need him to do.
It was before last season. We didn't know it was to come,
which is fair. We didn't.
Posey would not have fixed anything last year. Shane Battier and James Posey would not have fixed anything last year.
Right.
I think that much is very clear. They probably would have been hurt as well. They probably would have been on.
Well, and that's why, to be quite honest, one of the reasons I get so excited watching a guy like Vince Williams Jr. is his game is. It reminds me a bit of James Posey. Reminds me a bit of it.
Okay. That's interesting. Smaller, though, isn't he? I know he's lengthy.
Vince? Yeah, he's smaller than him.
He's 6'4". He's 6'4". James, what, 6'6", 6'7"?
It's not too big of a difference. It's not like I'm comparing a guard to a wing.
But that's also one of the biggest discussions around the Grizzlies right now is the size of that starting lineup and the size they're going to have out there on the
Posey's
wing.
Posey's 6'8". Holy crap.
Yeah, that's a big guy.
Yeah, but their game style is similar.
Yeah, I guess so. I want to see Vince's offensive game come along a little bit more. I think it can. I don't know how many opportunities he's going to have. With the Grizzlies coming up next year, what do we expect offensively from Vince Williams Jr. in a Grizzlies uniform offensively next year? We know defense is the given with him. What's he going to provide on the offense?
Do you know how much James Posey scored when he was a Grizzly?
How much?
13 points a game.
Yeah.
Something around there, 10 to 13 points.
You think Vince is going
to
be around there?
I think Vince could get... One of the years he was in Memphis, he averaged 8. I think Vince could give you 8 to 10 points a game. That's not asking too much.
All right. I guess.
We saw him do it last year.
Just shoot around. Well, in different circumstances, Connor. Completely different circumstances.
He still played with a lot of... I'm saying that Vince can give you 8 points a game next year isn't...
Okay, 8.
That's
eight,
not asking for the world.
Let's say 8 and above 35% from 3
is
the idea from Vince Williams Jr.
Posey shot 30% from 3 that season.
Ugh.
See?
Yuck.
I was here, Gabe.
Gnarly.
I was here.
That's gnarly. Yeah. But yeah.
Posey could hoop, but I'm telling you, their games are similar.
I think they've built that staff out, though, getting back to the Phoenix Suns. They built that staff out relatively well, but we're still going to have questions about them and what they're going to do with their depth. I have no earthly idea what they can do. They have way too much money committed to those three guys. One of those guys is a complete no-show in Brad Beal. That Suns team has a uphill battle to be super competitive in the West. I think they can be a top six seed. They were this year. I understand that part of it. You still have Kevin Durant. You still have Devin Booker. But when we actually get to sort of, you know what, cutting time, what are they going to do in the playoffs?
Not cutting time?
Yeah.
You know who they need to sign? Tyus Jones.
Yeah, I think that would make a whole lot of sense. But what have we heard from Matt Ishbia about point guard. He said, I don't necessarily want a point guard because I want the ball in the hands of those three stars as much as possible.
That worked great last year.
You know who could get the ball into their hands? A point guard, a guy like Tyus Jones. And Tyus is still out there floating in the wind. This is insane to me. This is insane.
I am surprised Tyus hasn't been grabbed yet. Because so many teams could use a player like Tyus Jones. I'm not saying the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies do not need Tyus.
This is where it's been interesting this offseason with the new CBA. We saw Gary Trent Jr. settle for a minimum deal.
Right.
Tyus Jones is very much in that. He's a tweener from a contract standpoint. Where you have, I talked about the middle class being cut out. You have the max guys, and you basically have the minimum guys and guys that are slightly above the minimum. Tyus Jones is that tweener contract, and I wonder if he's holding out to see what the biggest type of deal he can
get. It's a great point. That's probably exactly what's happening.
Yeah, because like $10 million to $12 million, I don't know if there's a lot of teams that want to spend that right now on a guy like Tyus Jones, where it's just like, as your starting point guard, you don't feel that great about him, but he is a very useful player. Very useful player if you surround him with a bunch of talent. And I think the Suns have that. I think he would be good with the Lakers as well. That would be something that they could look into. But
they have Bronny.
Oh, yeah, they have Bronny. They have Bronny. But I it's just strange to me that a guy that's that useful as an NBA player is not
signed. I could see him, maybe landing on a team like Miami, too.
That'd be an interesting. Okay, I can rock with that. Because usually it's Jimmy Butler on ball, and I don't know.
Or Hero. They've been using Hero a lot.
Hero on ball.
Yeah.
And I think he's better served probably off ball as an off ball scorer.
Hero? Yeah.
Yeah, but he can get downhill, get involved. He can facilitate a little bit.
In the play-in games, he popped off. That was wild.
Yeah, but Tyus Jones, I think he'll land somewhere. He'll be useful for somebody, but I'm surprised it's taken this long.
Right now the Heat have Terry Rozier and Alec Burks.
I wonder how long it's going to take for NBA teams to get used to the new wave, the new way that they have to manage rosters. Because there's a big...
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a two-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks... What happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Learning curve here. There's a big learning curve, and I don't know if everybody's, quite where they want to be.
Do you
as far as managing
will?
The money.
Do you think they ever will get used to it? Because a part of me feels like they're just going to complain, and then when the new CBA happens in 2030, it's going to be gone.
I guess. You think that,
I think the players don't like it either.
Well, yeah, because
it's taking money.
There's
out of
money. Yeah, there's money on the table. I keep bringing up Gary Trent Jr. It's insane to me. That's a minimum player.
Right. The high end guys are making the most money we've ever seen.
Yes,
they're good.
But the middle class is dying.
Oh my God! Is the NBA just our country?
Yes,
like what is happening?
The middle class is dying, or maybe dead, at least until 2030. We'll see what happens. We'll see. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we have some Memphis basketball news. And it's not good news. Coaching staff changes. There's a coach that stepped down and went elsewhere. We'll tell you who that was or who that is and where they're headed next. And before we get into this Memphis basketball news, I want to give a huge congrats to a friend of the show, a guest, recurring guest during football season, Harold Grader. He was elected this week as the chairman of the board for the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame. He's a grade-A human being, and he deserves everything that comes his way. Hardworking as hell, and I know he'll do a good job. He is going to be the chairman of the board for the Tennessee Sports Hall of Fame through June of 2026. So shout-out to Harold. That's really cool news. That's really cool news on top of what he already has on his plate. Now he's going to be a lot more busy, I'd imagine, but he finds a way. He finds a way. There's no doubt about it. Now on to Memphis basketball. We have some coaching staff turnover. I mean, this is consistent under Penny Hardaway. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it seems like guys don't stay but for a couple of years at a time, and then they end up leaving. But one of the mainstays since at least 2020 has been director of recruiting Jeremy Kipnis. He's leaving the program. And what's strange about him leaving is, one, I think he's done a good job as the director of recruiting, but he's heading to Sacred Heart to be a new assistant coach there. And I don't know his full role there, no idea. But that is a tremendous step down from a program like Memphis. And I would be remiss if I didn't at least share a little bit of concern and sort of ask the question. Something stinks a little bit. This is a lot of turnover, and it's strange to see a guy who's done such a good job. I know it's a great opportunity for him, and he's moving on. But it's strange to see a guy like this, who's done such a good job in his role, leave at this particular moment. I know next year's a massive inflection point for this program. Last year went badly. It was toxic. And maybe that's the explanation here. But I'm a little dumbfounded. I'm relatively worried about all the turnover we've seen in the past couple of years.
There certainly has been a lot. To be quite honest, though, with this one, I was just like, oh, the guy maybe wanted to get into coaching. That's kind of what my first thought was. And I do think that Memphis has had a tremendous success with recruiting the last few years, and with the transfer portal, they've done a pretty good job. So he did well in his job. So maybe I think it could be as simple as he just wanted to jump into coaching, and Sacred Heart was probably where he had to start.
And then my next thought, right after that, probably a more positive spin on the whole thing. Director of recruiting leaving, yeah, you're going to get somebody else to fill that role. I understand that. But director of recruiting at Memphis was Slick Rick
and Penny. Yeah.
You know who the director of recruiting for the Memphis basketball program
Penny Hardaway.
Is? Penny Hardaway.
Yeah.
So I wonder, like, if that role is relatively extinct and it's not that, like, you're just not that involved and you want a different position and you want to feel more involved behind the scenes.
maybe so. Yeah, he was. Yeah. If he already felt like he was on the sidelines, he said, I might as well go be on the sidelines somewhere for real. Yeah, as long as Penny Hardaway is at the University of Memphis, I'm not going to be worried about recruiting in any way. It's just because he is the guy that recruits. If you get a phone call from Penny Hardaway, you answer that phone call. You do.
Yeah, but that's a good pickup, I guess, for Sacred Heart. A really good recruiter from one of the top staffs in the country. That's good for a low-level Division I team like Sacred Heart.
I would be more concerned if it was an actual assistant coach that was leaving. But with it being like the director of recruiting. But again, in the new era of college athletics, I do think that we see movement not only from players more so, but we have also seen it from coaches. So I do think that there are some issues that have happened within the Memphis organization. You have heard assistant coaches talk about how dysfunctional it can be. I mean, Mike Miller, we know that it was not a great experience for him when he was assistant coach at Memphis. We've heard the stories about it. But at the end of the day, I'm not sure. I hesitate to tie this one to anything happening behind closed doors at Memphis that caused him to leave. It just seemed like to me maybe an opportunity that he wanted opened up, so he went there. And maybe he did feel like he was on the sidelines a bit because with Memphis basketball recruiting, it is Penny and Slick Rick. Those are the two guys that are pretty much doing all of it.
And I don't think it's crazy to say or bad to say that last year definitely has
it was nuts.
Left a sour taste in everybody's mouth.
Yeah. That's a great point.
Like, it's that simple. People can get mad at that. They can act as if nothing, there's not going to be, effects from what happened last year. But there clearly was. The transfer portal guys that got out, Joe Cooper said it was the worst experience he's ever had. Jonathan Pierre said some of the same things. Like, it's not that hard to believe that last year is causing a lot of things like this.
And he never, they certainly never had to stop recruiting during the season. So it was probably long hours, long days for him.
Yeah, now speaking of recruiting, this team heading into next year, what do we think, Connor, ultimately? I think I like where we're headed. I think I like the additions that they made. P.J. Haggerty, Dane Danger, Colby Rogers, Bronco Okoji, Tyrese Hunter, Tyreek Smith, Musa Cisse, P.J. Carter. More defensive-oriented, getting back to Penny's roots. I like what this team is, but I do think there's a general question about offense and how it's going to be produced, especially in the non-con. We know how important that is going to be, and I think they could have a little bit of growing pains through that. But I think offense is going to be the question until we actually see this, on the floor. And I wonder who's going to sort of take the bull by the horns and be that lead guy. P.J. Haggerty, of course, is probably the leader in the clubhouse. 22 points per game last year at Tulsa, but it was with Tulsa on a very bad team. Tyrese Hunter could be a wild card in this conversation because he's been around the block at some power programs and done a really good job, whether it was Iowa State or at Texas. So I'm curious how this materializes offensively. I feel confident defensively, but how many points are they going to score going into next year is a real question I have.
I like the roster. I like the roster. I'm a little bit away from loving it just because I think that we can all agree that maybe another wing guy, a go-to wing scorer, would be good for this roster. But to your point, I do think that it is built in a way that they can maximize the way Penny Hardaway wants them to play basketball. And that is probably the most important thing here. One, you have them all on campus now, so you're going to get that chemistry. They're not meeting each other at the airport.
Right.
He recruited players that are defensive-minded, that can run his defense, and hopefully can run the offense that he wants them to. I would have to imagine that P.J. Haggerty gets the first shot to be the guy on the offensive end.
Well, he'll have the ball in his hands mostly.
Right, but even so, he feels like the most talented guy.
One thing also, as opposed to last year, that I do love about the way this team was recruited, you have way more than one ball handler.
Yes.
Like last year when Javon Quinterly was off the floor, even though he was inconsistent as all get out last year, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. He was not that great. Consistently. I mean, he had some good spike games. He was decent in the clutch early in the season, but he definitely had those inconsistencies to his game. But when he was off the floor, there was no one else to pick up that slack. It would have to be David Jones, and because David Jones had to take on that role, he was, I think, first. Was he first last year in turnovers or right up there, second? I think potentially he was top three to top five
in the conference
in turnovers in the country last year. I think when you sort of pair P.J. Haggerty, Tyrese Hunter, throw Bronco Okoji as that secondary ball handler off the bench, I think you have more options in the way of getting offense initiated and facilitated. And that's good. That is a great thing because we've had years in the past where it was just Alex Lomax who had to take on that role, or it was just Javon Quinterly taking on that role. Kendrick Davis did a really good job with it, but it was just Kendrick Davis taking on that role. You have more than enough guys who are capable of having the ball in their hands and not turning the ball over.
Yeah, no, I think having multiple ball handlers is absolutely going to help them. Because you were asking, when the ball was in David Jones' hands, he was having to create not only for himself but everybody, and that just wasn't, I mean, we've seen it kind of in the summer league. That's just not the way he wanted to play basketball, and I don't think it maximized him. It definitely made him score the basketball a lot, but it wasn't efficient offense.
Yeah, and one thing I am incredibly pleased with, too, with this roster, the front court is very good. I know that it's sort of a secondary conversation, and people don't really latch onto it yet, but they have four guys, Nick Jourdain, who can step out to the three-point line, play really good defense. He's very switchable. Play on the perimeter. Tyreek Smith, who's going to be that energy guy up and down the floor, can block shots at a high level, even though he's not the tallest guy in the world. Musa Cisse, last time that Musa Cisse was on campus, Memphis had the number one KenPom defensive efficiency. So there's that. And then Dane Danger, I think, brings a different look than what we've seen in the past with Penny Hardaway bigs. I think he's going to run a little bit better. He's lost some weight. But generally speaking, he's going to be a back-to-the-basket, you know, maybe a face-up guy who can get the ball on the ground and potentially go score at the rim. And I don't know if they've really had a guy like that that's been able to do it consistently. You could look at Jalen Duren, but it took a while for him to get that offensive bag going and understand his role within an offense when he was a freshman.
Yeah, I'm really curious. He feels like a bit of an X factor for this team. Like, if Dane Danger can step in and be an offensive presence for them, I do think it elevates their ceiling. I did go and look at it because I was curious. David Jones, I found that his turnover rate last year was 14.2%, and he had 3 turnovers a game.
Yeah, pretty high.
Pretty high.
Pretty high.
To a 96 in total.
Yeah, yeah. But all said and done, like this roster, I'm curious what they're going to do with this director of recruiting position, although it feels like we know who the directors of recruiting are, Penny Hardaway and Slick Rick and Rick Stansberry. But we need to go ahead and grab a break and get into hour number two. And opening hour number two, you know who that's going to be? That's going to be Jeff Calkins. He's columnist of the Daily Memphian, also hosts the Jeff Calkins Show, 9 to 11, right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. We'll be right back.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.